National Broadcasting Company presents Eyes Aloft.
Army flash. One. Single motor. Low. Steam. 6 John 3. Overhead. West.
Eyes aloft, watching the sky, watching for planes flying the lanes up above. Eyes aloft.
Eyes aloft. The 4th Fighter Command of the United States Army Air Forces, in cooperation with West Coast radio stations, dedicates this official weekly radio program to the 150,000 volunteer civilian filter center workers and ground observers whose round-the-clock vigilance keeps watchful guard of the Pacific Coast against attack by enemy planes.
Eyes aloft, night and day, we'll help protect the USA.
Good evening. This is Harry Von Zell speaking. Tonight, the 27th performance of Eyes Aloft brings the first news release of the War Department's decision regarding the change in its tentative plans that the WACs would take over operation of the filter centers. Lieutenant Colonel Robert Frost, signal officer of the 4th Fighter Command headquarters, was flown here this afternoon to make this important explanation. Also, you'll hear the music of Gordon Jenkins and the Hollywoodmen, filter center news by Sam Hayes, this week's winning entry of the Why Do I Come Here contest, another great American story, and the presentation of the Eyes Aloft Gold Trophy Award.
Brooklyn.
For an interview with Lieutenant Commander Rudolph Bauer, Navy flying officer who saved a soldier's life through the aid of members of an Oregon observation post. And now here is your Eyes Aloft narrator, Gayne Whitman.
How do you do, ladies and gentlemen? Tonight we have a most vital announcement of interest to every filter center worker. It will clear up many questions and rumors about the future of filter center personnel. But we open our program with the winner of this week's Why Do I Come Here contest. Each week we present a Treasury Department war savings stamp book with $5 worth of war stamps to the person sending in the best 100-word entry stating why he or she continues to faithfully serve the aircraft warning service. Also, the winner's observation post or filter center receives a handsome desk clock. Gordon Jenkins composes an original orchestral score to background the reading of each winning entry. Here is this week's winner of our contest. Why do I come here? Why do I come here?
This week's winner, Mrs. George C. Flower, Gresham, Oregon.
Why do I come here? Daughter of a man who was an emigrant from a little country in Europe, I learned when a tiny child what the four freedoms meant to one who left the land of his birth and crossed the ocean to a strange country to satisfy his freedom-loving heart. Love for our United States is perhaps stronger in one who realizes what it means to live without freedom. And my father instilled this great love of our country in the hearts of his family. Coming to the post for a few hours' watch is such a small contribution to make. But as I scan the starlit skies, my ears tuned for the roar of motor, there is a prayer of thankfulness on my lips for the privilege of being an American. And in the twinkling of the stars, I see the twinkling smile of approval from my freedom-loving father. Yes, that's why I come here.
Congratulations, Mrs. George C. Flower of Gresham, Oregon, for contributing this week's winning entry. Your prize of $5 worth of war stamps has been mailed to you. Also, you have won for your observation post an attractive desk clock. And now, Harry Von Zell, will you read the three names of the honorable mention prize winners?
Right, Gayne. Books with $1 worth of war saving stamps have been mailed as honorable mention prizes to the following persons: John P. Thompson, 217 Church Street North, Montesano, Washington. Dorothy Adams, of Winters, California. And Mrs. Ira Stanley, 208 South State Street, Kent, Washington.
Volunteers who wish to contribute a 100-word entry for next week's Why Do I Come Here contest should address their entries to Eyes Aloft, Hollywood, California. Statements are based on originality and sincerity. Decision of the judges is final. Duplicate prizes will be awarded in the case of tie. Merely write in why you continue to faithfully serve the Aircraft Warning Service. Maybe you will be a winner. Time now for that popular department, Filter Center News, edited by the well-known newscaster Sam Hayes. At the conclusion of this news feature, you will hear from Colonel Robert Frost, who interprets the War Department's statement regarding Filter Center personnel. But here first, the fifth edition of Filter Center News. Sam Hayes.
And good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Sam Hayes bringing you personal news items about Pacific Coast Filter Center workers from border to border. Seattle, Washington. Mae Peterson, Seattle Information Center worker of 40 tricks, will leave February 20th to begin her training as a WAC. This brings to 14 the total enlistments of Seattle Information Center volunteers in the Women's Army Auxiliary Corps. The loss of the Army Air Force's Aircraft Warning Service is the gain of the WACs. Both are essential war services. Olympia, Washington. The Washington State Military Affairs Committee and other legislators now in session in the state capitol visited the Olympia Filter Center recently at the invitation of Captain Leroy J. Wanlass, Filter Center officer. More Pacific Coast legislators to learn firsthand of aircraft warning service activities. San Francisco. Evelyn Derrick, age 21, of shift number 4 today, is mourning the loss of her brother, Walter, age 19, a third-class petty officer of the United States Navy, who was killed while on active duty. Evelyn volunteered the day after Pearl Harbor and has been serving the AWS ever since. Our deepest sympathy, Miss Derrick. Also, San Francisco. Margaret Oldenburg, shift 9, wife of Ensign Jack H. Oldenburg, who is on active duty, has just left for Texas, where she will train for the Women's Auxiliary Ferry Squadron.
Sam, may I interrupt one moment?
Certainly, Harry.
Well, thanks. I want to speak now to the women of San Francisco only. Ladies, many former Filter Center workers are joining the WACs and the WAVES. This leaves vacancies for new recruits to the Aircraft Warning Service. If you are willing to share this work to help protect your nation, go to your phone at the conclusion of this broadcast and learn how you may become a San Francisco Filter Center worker. Just dial Exbrook 5998. The number again, Exbrook 5998. You are needed. You can hold a place in an essential war work and still remain in your home city. Call Exbrook 5998.
Port Angeles, Washington. The 48-hour week won't influence Connie Wonder's loyalty to the Filter Center. Connie works from 12 midnight to 8 in the morning at the mill in Port Angeles and then comes in for 3 hours of duty nearly every day at the Port Angeles Filter Center. That's the way to help win the war. Sacramento. Miss Dorothy Myers, a Sacramento Junior College girl who has served the AWS more than 1,500 hours, is now reporting to duty in a special overseas military unit. Eugene, Oregon. Wedding bells. Wedding bells will soon ring for Marjorie Brazil, who has just announced her engagement to handsome Sergeant Ted Strupp of Eugene Filter Center. San Diego. Mrs. Lillian Britton completed 1 year's service at the San Diego Filter Center on February 6th. During this time, she was never absent nor tardy from her midnight to dawn shift. Mrs. Britton not only fulfills her duties at the Filter Center, she manages a home for her family and also holds down a full-time job during the day. That's what we call really pitching in. Bellingham, Washington. Happy birthday, Stump.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear.
Corporal Ernest Simmons and Private First Class Glenn Schertz of the Bellingham Filter Center. Roseburg, Oregon. More wedding bells. On February 14th, Lois Blake and Lieutenant Norman Benson were married at the First Christian Church. Lois Blake is the daughter of Mrs. Bertha C. Blake, supervisor of Shift N at the Filter Center. Redding, California. There have been some changes made. After serving over a year, the women of Shift 8 conceded the graveyard shift Thursday mornings to the men. North Coast Filter Center, San Francisco. Martha Barham, shift number 7, has temporarily resigned, anticipating a blessed event. And thus we close tonight's Filter Center News with this week's nomination for the Honor Roll of Service. This week, we name Mrs. Helen Longfellow of Shift 6 of the Redding Filter Center, who served the Aircraft Warning Service during the month of January, 201 hours. This is your Eyes Alofter, Sam Hayes, bidding you one and all a very good evening.
We present at this time Colonel Robert Frost, signal officer of the 4th Fighter Command. Harry Von Zell, will you and Colonel Frost take over?
We have it, Gain. Now, Ivan, for the past several months, it has been generally understood that the Women's Army Auxiliary Corps, the WACS, would relieve the civilian volunteers of the information and filter centers. Can you tell us what the present plans happen to be?
I'm happy to be able to make the first formal and authoritative announcement relative to this problem. Plans have been changed now.
Changed? You mean the WACS will not replace civilian volunteers at the filter and information centers?
Positively not. These volunteers have spent many long hours carrying on the work of the Aircraft Warning Service and have demonstrated to the War Department their willingness and ability to perform this indispensable service to the 4th Fighter Command.
Well, that's certainly true, I know.
We have just received word today from the War Department in Washington. The Commanding General of the Army Air Forces has just notified the Commanding General of the Western Defense Command that no members of the Women's Army Auxiliary Corps will replace volunteers who man the Aircraft Warning Service installations in the continental United States.
In other words, the Army is pleased and satisfied with the work the civilians have done.
Yes, the most efficient kind of a job. As a matter of fact, civilian volunteers will be called upon now to perform vital services for the Aircraft Warning Service on an even larger scale.
Oh, then the AWS needs more recruits?
Positively. Any woman who can fill the necessary requirements is asked to offer her services. You see, the WACS, on the other hand, will be used by the War Department to release military personnel for service in combat areas. WACS will not be used to replace civilian volunteers who are already performing an essential service in a superior manner.
A superior manner? Just how do you mean that, Colonel Frost?
I simply mean that the civilian volunteers of the 4th Fighter Command have been doing a superior job for more than a year. As you know, Harry, superior is the highest rating we have in the Army.
Yes, I know. And you say more civilians are needed now to keep the filter centers in operation according to Army requirements.
8,000 volunteers are needed to man information and filter centers here on the Pacific Coast. They are needed as plotters, filterers, tellers, clerks, teletype operators, and in a variety of other assignments.
I see. Well, what is the War Department's attitude regarding the filling of these vital jobs?
Well, the War Department has, by this new and well-defined action, placed the responsibility of manning the filter centers and observation posts squarely upon the citizens of the Pacific Coast.
Well, now that they know where they stand, I think everyone who has served is ready to settle down in their jobs for the duration.
We of the Army believe they will continue. However, the turnover of filter center workers is large at this moment.
Turnover of personnel is higher now? Why?
For many reasons. Many men and women are joining other branches of the armed forces. Increasingly difficult domestic problems require some to leave. Countless reasons open the way for any number of civilians to share the responsibility of operating the Army's information and filter centers.
Mm-hmm. Well, how can people volunteer? Whom do they call? Where do they go to find out if they're acceptable?
They should telephone or visit their local office of civilian defense and say that they want to join the Aircraft Warning Service. It is every citizen's duty to offer his services, if he or she can possibly spare the time each week while this war is going on.
Well, thank you, Colonel Frost, for coming here to release that good news tonight on our Eyes Aloft program.
The artillery, the Air Corps, the Navy, the Quartermaster's Corps, they all have their own fighting song. Not so the famous infantry of the Army. They have no official song. So Jack Rock, well-known Hollywood songwriter, has just written an up-to-the-minute song for the infantry. The song has been presented to infantry headquarters in Washington for consideration. And here, Gordon Jenkins and the Hollywoodmen give the premier performance of this catchy, exciting song, Marching Feet.
Send out the news that hobnail shoes are on the march again. Send out the word that we have heard, the cry of conquered men. We'll fly when we can, we'll ride when we can, but the chant of victory is the rhythmic beat, the marching beat of the U.S. infantry.
Started marching on the morn that America was born.
One, two, three, four. One, two, three, four.
Marching always with a plan for the liberty of man.
One, two, three, four. One, two, three, four.
Through the dust and through the snow, forward marching on we go.
One, two, three, four. One, two, three, four.
Marching with a steady tread for the victory ahead.
end of the cheer that we are here and on the winning side. Send out the noise that Sammy's voice will never be denied. We'll fly when we can, we'll ride when we can, but the chant of victory is the rhythmic beat, the marching beat of the U.S. Infantry.
We switch controls now to Portland, Oregon, where Lieutenant Bill Hines, Executive Officer of the Portland Filter Area Ground Observer Corps, is waiting to interview Lieutenant Commander Rudolph C. Bauer, U.S. Navy. Are you there, Portland?
This is Portland. Lieutenant Hines speaking. Sitting here with me is the Executive Officer of the Naval Air Station at Tongue Point. He's Lieutenant Commander Rudolph Bauer, who made the daring rescue of a soldier who was the member of a crew of an Army bomber which crashed into the ocean just off Gerhardt, Oregon. When did it all happen, Commander Bauer?
Last November 20th. I'll never forget that day.
Well, your station received the call, and you took a plane and went to the rescue.
Yes, but the thing that I have thought about so many times since is the fact that my naval air station received that warning call so fast.
Well, just what do you mean, sir?
I mean, it was a murky, drizzly morning. There was an overcast, and visibility was poor. Yet somebody, a civilian, saw that Army bomber crash into the ocean and knew what to do about it.
I know. The observation post at Seaside, Oregon, some 3 miles from Gerhardt, where the plane crashed, made an immediate report to the Portland Filter Center.
Yes, and there was still another report, that of a Mrs. Henry Goodrich at Gerhardt. The accident happened right out in front of her house on the beach.
How far from the shore did the plane crash into the ocean?
Well, I judge about a half a mile to a mile offshore. The pilot was evidently trying to get into land, but the headwinds were too strong.
But to go back to Mrs. Goodrich, she saw the bomber crash in the ocean. Did she call the Naval Air Station at Tongue Point?
No. She knew what to do. She called the Seaside Observation Post and reported.
Oh, but they'd seen the plane and reported it.
Yes, I know. But the observation post was 3 miles away. The accident happened right out in front of where Mrs. Goodrich lives, and she called and confirmed what the post observer...
Mr. Charles Voorhees?
I think so. Mrs. Goodrich confirmed and added to the observer's observations. He was able to make a complete report, and the nearest air station to the accident, the Naval Air Station Tongue Point, had a complete report before we took off for the search.
You say before we took off.
That's right.
Well, don't you mean you? You're the man who flew out there and rescued one of the men.
Well, I had Radiman First Class R.K. Whalen with me, and we did what we could do together.
Well, the people down in Hollywood are going to dramatize the actual facts of the incident. Shall we cut back to them? You might get a kick out of hearing just the way it all happened, Commander Bauer.
I certainly would. But first, may I say something?
Why, certainly, sir. What's that?
We of the Navy think that the observers, the Filter Center people, all of those aircraft warning service, are doing a great job. If it hadn't been for those volunteers, a man's life might have been lost. As it was, two men died, but two lived after the crash.
You saved one.
And one swam ashore, exhausted. But the man's life who was saved by the prompt reporting by the ground observers in that area must be worth every hour that any member of the aircraft warning service has ever put in.
Well, thank you, Commander Bauer. And let's switch back to Hollywood and listen to the entire incident recreated. It's yours, Eyes Aloft.
Yeah, that is a plane. Awful low. Drop something white. There's another. Must be little parachutes. It's so rainy, I can't see. Better call and report. Hello, operator. Operator. Oh, Army Flash. One, unknown.
Charles Voorhees, Seaside, Oregon ground observer on duty at the time, reported the plane and the fact it was dropping some sort of parachutes. The Portland Filter Center, to whom he reported, notified the Portland Army Air Base at once. It went into immediate action.
Plane in trouble. Off the Gearhart Coast. Bad weather there. Get right down there.
Yes, sir.
The Portland Army Air Base dispatched searching planes. But Gearhart, near Seaside, Oregon, is some 100 miles from Portland. In the meantime, Lieutenant Southern, pilot of the distressed plane, was bucking a stiff headwind, trying to fly his crippled Army bomber toward the shoreline. When his first motor quit, he was almost 50 miles from shore. Now he is less than 5. But his altitude is low.
The other men bail out?
3, yes.
Their chutes open?
1 did. The other caught on the loop antenna.
They're dead. Where is he?
Hanging onto the tail fin, I think. Riding her down piggyback.
Hey, what's up now?
Other motor given out?
That's gone. I don't think we can make it in. A bad headwind.
How far offshore are we?
About a mile. Not much more. Oh, you feel that? That one pulled our nose down.
We're going to crash.
Yeah, any minute. We're going to... Hey, look out, Sergeant! Hold on! Brace yourself!
On the Oregon shore, a Mrs. Henry Goodrich, while walking on the beach in front of her home, saw the plane fall into the water. Then she saw no more. The sea was rough. The wind was growing. Mrs. Goodrich ran to her home to try to call the seaside observation post.
Operator, operator.
Number, please.
I don't know the number. I want to talk to the seaside ground observer post there in the promenade. And hurry, please.
I'm sorry. I cannot connect you with that number. That's a military line.
You have to connect me. This is an emergency.
Emergency?
Yes, I just saw an airplane, an Army bomber, I think, crash into the ocean.
I can't connect you with the post, but I'll report to them. However, they've already made the report to the filter center.
In but a matter of minutes after the Army bomber had fallen into the sea, a call reached the Tongue Point Naval Air Station near Astoria. The call reached Executive Officer Lieutenant Commander Rudolph Bauer.
Hey, get a plane warmed up at once. I'll fly a Grumman amphibian. Yeah, have it ready. I'll be right down. Okay, goodbye.
What's the trouble, Commander Bauer?
A plane crashed in the ocean off the Gearhart Beach.
Whose plane?
Report didn't say.
Where'd the report come from?
One of those aircraft warning service posts saw the plane fall. Posted seaside. Say, I gotta get out of the plane.
You flying out, Commander?
Sure. Look, call Whalen. Tell him to report at once.
Yes, sir.
Sea's heavy. Crash plane isn't gonna have much chance of holding together in this weather. I hope we can get the crew off it, if they're still alive.
Lieutenant Commander Bauer, U.S. Navy, flew out within 11 minutes after the plane had crashed. Accompanied by radio man First Class R.K. Whalen, Commander Bauer flew a single-motored Navy amphibian out toward Gearhart, Oregon Beach. They flew low over the turbulent water. The ocean was a vast expanse of chop and whitecaps. At last, Commander Bauer sighted the wreckage less than a quarter of a mile from shore. He circled. Then, Commander Bauer saw a man swimming in the water below.
We're going to land, Whalen. Brace yourself. Can we make it?
I don't know. We can land, but I don't know if we can take off again. Hold tight.
Yes, sir.
We got to try to pick up that man down there in the water. If we can get him, we can taxi back or wait for a Coast Guard boat or something. Hold on. Here we go into a trough.
Never mind. I'll try to hold her nose into the wind and keep us from upsetting. Climb out there on the wing. Try to reach that boy. Hurry it up, Whalen.
Yes, sir.
With Commander Bauer trying to hold his light seaplane steady, radio man Whalen climbed over the wing, lay on his belly, and fished down into the sea where an exhausted Sergeant Bill Dott was making his last fight for life. Whalen finally succeeded in pulling the nearly drowned man onto the wing.
Here we come, buddy.
Oh, there we are.
Good work, Whalen. Now, pull him over. Put him in the rear cockpit if you can make it. Sorry I can't leave the control. Come help, but we'll be scuttled.
I'll make it with him. All right, come on, boy. You're okay now. All right, a little more.
Radio man Whalen succeeded in getting the member from the wrecked bomber into the cockpit. By superhuman efforts and great skill, Lieutenant Commander Bauer tried for a takeoff. And he made it. In less than 30 minutes from the time the report was made, one member of the wrecked bomber was ashore in the hospital at the Tongue Point Naval Air Base.
Yeah. How about it, Doctor? Will the boy live?
Well, he was more drowned than alive when you brought him in, Commander.
I say, will he live?
For the first 2 hours, he didn't have a pulse. Or at least we couldn't find it. Now he's coming around nicely.
Oh, thank heavens.
Oh, when he gets better, he can thank you, Commander.
Oh, not me. I just went out there. If the observers at that observation post hadn't seen the crash and reported it as fast as they did, well, I nor anyone else could have gotten there in time to do anything. Now, Sergeant Dart can thank those observers for saving his life.
Yeah. You know, the pilot, Lieutenant Southern, got ashore okay. Word came in about an hour ago.
How is he?
Completely exhausted. Infantry beach patrol boys pulled him out of the breakers. Lucky for him, they were on hand.
Yeah. What about the other three men? Any report?
No, not yet. I guess they didn't make it.
Yeah. Well, I guess I'll take a plane and go back out and look some more.
You've gone back 3 times, Commander. Weather's worse now. You better not try it.
Well, I'll go back and look once more. There's always a chance.
Though Navy, Army, and Coast Guard spent the remainder of the day searching, only 2 of the bomber crew came out alive. The pilot who swam ashore, the sergeant who was picked up at sea by Lieutenant Commander Bauer. His life was saved. Saved by Lieutenant Commander Bauer, who was able to get to the scene of tragedy so quickly because the seaside observation post so efficiently made a report of the accident. Today, a soldier thanks the Ground Observer Corps for his life.
Each week, we present the National Broadcasting Company's Eyes Aloft Gold Trophy Award to some outstanding observation post or filter center. Tonight, Major Gomer Lewis makes the presentation. Major Lewis.
On guard day and night means on guard every minute, every second of the day and night. By the quick and intelligent action of a ground observer at the Seaside, Oregon Observation Post, it was possible to save the life last November 20th of a young flying sergeant. For diligence, for efficiency, and for clear thinking, we salute the Seaside, Oregon Observation Post and proudly present the personnel of that post with this week's Eyes Aloft Gold Trophy Award.
This is Gain Whitman saying goodnight to the 150,000 valiant Aircraft Warning Service volunteer civilians who keep constant vigil of our home front so that America will be ever safe from enemy attack by air. Bye.
Don't forget to send in your 100-word entry to the Why Do I Come Here contest. Send entries to Eyes Aloft, Hollywood. And if San Francisco women would like to offer their services to the Filter Center, they should immediately call Exbrook 5998. Eyes Aloft is written and directed by Robert L. Reb. Music is composed and conducted by Gordon Jenkins. This is Harry Von Zell charging you to always remember Eyes Aloft.
Eyes Aloft, watching the sky, watching for planes flying the lanes up above.
This program comes to you from Hollywood. This is the National Broadcasting Company.